Hello, and welcome to Maplewood Barn Radio Theater. Come on in, sit a while, relax, while we tell you a story or two. For this week's broadcast of our new KBIA show, featuring lesser-known works of classic authors, we've chosen two tales by that master of terror, H.G. Wells. The first, called The Cone, tells a story of infidelity and revenge. The second, about a sinister orchid and its victims, was the inspiration for a Broadway show. See if you can guess which one. But first, the Maplewood Barn Players hope you enjoy their audio production of The Cone by H.G. Wells. The night was hot and overcast. The sky red, rimmed with the lingering sunset of midsummer. The lovers sat at the open window, trying to fancy the air was fresher there. The trees and shrubs of the garden stood stiff and dark, and they whispered, even though her husband was elsewhere. Farther were the three lights of the railway signal against the lowering sky.
He does not suspect?
Not he. He thinks nothing of the works and the prices of fuel. He has no imagination, no poetry.
None of these men of iron have. They have no hearts.
He has not.
This country was all fresh and beautiful once, and now it is Gehenna. Down that way, nothing but pot banks and chimneys belching fire and dust into the face of heaven. But what does it matter? An end comes, an end to all this cruelty. Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Dear.
My dear one, it seems so strange that you should have come into my life like this. To open? All this wonderful world. This world of love to me.
Well?
I was afraid I had missed you, Horrocks.
I told Mr. Rout it was just possible you might come back.
You wanted to see me?
I came to see you.
Aye?
You promised to show me some fine effects of moonlight and smoke.
I promised to show you some fine effects of moonlight and smoke.
And I thought I might catch you tonight before you went down to the works and come with you.
Of course. I promised to show you the ironworks under their proper dramatic conditions. It's odd how I could have forgotten.
If I'm troubling you,
not in the least.
Have you been telling Mr. Rout of all these contrasts of flame and shadow you think so splendid? That dreadful theory of yours that machinery is beautiful and everything else in the world ugly? I thought he would not spare you, Mr. Rout. It's his great theory, his one discovery in art.
I am slow to make discoveries, but what I discover...
Well?
Nothing. I promised to show you the works, and you are ready to go?
Quite.
Very well.
My hat?
That's my work basket. Here it is. Don't go. Beware of him.
Got it? Better say goodbye to Mrs. Horrocks.
Good evening, Mrs. Horrocks. So, this is the ironworks factory?
Aye. Isn't it lovely? The iridescent coal, the trains running back and forth, and rising above it all, those colossal inky black cylinders of the Jeddah Company blast furnaces, the central edifices of the whole ironworks, crowned with smoke and flames.
And are you the manager of the entire factory?
Aye. Oh, look, they're preparing to shoot fuel into one of the smokestacks. Quite a conflagration, wouldn't you say?
Certainly, you could get some fine effects of color with your furnaces.
Ah.
At present, your moonlight effect, though, is hardly ripe. The moon is still smothered by vestiges of daylight.
Vestiges of daylight? Oh, of course, of course. Come along.
Please, don't grab my arm.
I said come along. Arm in arm now. You see the fine effect of the railway signals towards Burslem? Little green lights and red and white lights, all against the haze. You have an eye for effect, Ralph. It's a fine effect. And look at those furnaces of mine, how they rise upon us as we come down the hill. That to the right is my pet, 70 feet of him. I packed him myself, and he's boiled away cheerfully with iron in his guts for 5 long years. I've a particular fancy for him.
Please, my elbow.
That line of red there, a lovely bit of warm orange, you'd call it, Ralph. That's the puddler's furnaces. And there, in the hot light, 3 black figures. Did you see the white splash of the steam hammer then? That's the rolling mills. Come along. Clang, clatter, how it goes rattling across the floor. Sheet tin, Ralph. Amazing stuff. Glass mirrors are not in it when that stuff comes from the mill. And there goes the hammer again. Come along.
I say, why on earth are you nipping my arm off, Horrocks, and dragging me along like this?
Nipping your arm off? Sorry, but it's you taught me the trick of walking in that friendly way.
You haven't learned the refinements of it yet, then. By Jove, I'm black and blue.
Fine effects. Here comes a train. Puffs of smoke, the orange glare, the round eye of light in front of it, the melodious rattle. Fine effects. But those furnaces of mine used to be finer before we shoved cones in their throats and saved the gas.
How? Cones?
Cones, my man, cones. I'll show you one nearer. The flames used to flare out of the open throats. Great, what is it? Pillars of cloud by day, red and black smoke, and pillars of fire by night. Now we run it off in pipes and burn it to heat the blast, and the top is shut by a cone. You'll be interested in that cone.
But every now and then you get a burst of fire and smoke up there.
The cone's not fixed. It's hung by a chain from a lever and balanced by an equipoise. You shall see it nearer. Else, of course, there'd be no way of getting fuel into the thing. Every now and then the cone dips, and out comes the flare.
I see. The moon gets brighter.
Come along, arm in arm. Oh. Out of the way. Didn't you see the sign? Beware of trains.
I didn't see it coming.
The cone. Thought you did not hear.
I didn't.
I wouldn't have had you run over for the world.
For the moment, I lost my nerve.
See how fine these great mounds of mine, these clinker heaps, look in the night. That truck yonder, up above there, up it goes and out tilts the slag. See the palpitating red stuff go sliding down the slope? As we get nearer, the heat rises up and cuts the blast furnaces. See the quiver up above the big one? Not that way, this way. Between the heaps. That goes to the puddling furnaces. But I want to show you the canal first.
The train. Did you... Please, I would prefer that you would not hold my arm.
Hey? Come along now.
But...
Our canal by moonlight and firelight is an immense effect. You've never seen it. Fancy that. You've spent too many of your evenings philandering up in Newcastle there. I tell you, for real florid effects, but you shall see. Boiling water. Look at the blood-red reflections of the furnaces. The hot water is from the pipes, a tumultuous, almost boiling affluent. The steam rises up from the water in silent white wisps and streaks, an incessant succession of ghosts coming up from the black and red eddies, a white uprising that makes the head swim, with the shining black tower of the blast furnace rising overhead out of the mist. Magnificent. Here it is red, blood-red vapor, as red and hot as sin. But yonder there, where the moonlight falls on it and drives across the clinker heaps, it is white as death. Come along to the rolling mills. Here, peep through the little glass hole behind the pipes and see the tumbled fire writhing in the pit of the blast furnace.
Ah!
Aye, it may blind you for a moment, but that will pass. Step out onto this rail. It overhangs the furnace.
But it is so narrow. Is it wise to be here? We must be 70 feet up. It looks dangerous.
Ah, but look at the bird's eye view. Wonderful effects.
Oh, my God, that smell. I can hardly breathe. The sulfurous vapor has a pungent bitterness that's choking me.
Hold on to the rail. That's the cone I've been telling you of, and below that, 60 feet of fire and molten metal, with the air of the blast frothing through it like gas in soda water.
But the heat is so intense.
In the middle, temperature near 1,000 degrees. If you were dropped into it, flash into flame like a pinch of gunpowder in a candle. Put your hand out and feel the heat of his breath. Why, even up here I've seen the rainwater boiling off the trucks. And that cone there, it's a damn sight too hot for roasting cakes. The top side of it is 300 degrees.
300 degrees?
300 centigrade, mind. It will boil the blood out of you in no time.
I can't stand it. The heat, the smell.
Boil the blood out of you. No, you don't.
Let me
here,
go.
Here, come closer.
Let go of my arm.
But you must see the cone more closely. Now, over the rail.
Ah! Up my knees, my hands. I'm burning. Help me.
Smell your singeing skin above the sulfur. Fizzle, you fool. Fizzle, you hunter of woman, you hot-blooded hound. Boil, boil, boil. Here, perhaps some chunks of coal will help you.
Horrocks! Horrocks, help me!
Right, your clothes are beginning to char and glow. Your human likeness is departing out. You're a charred, blackened figure. You're dancing, you're writhing in agony.
Please, help me!
Oh, God, have mercy upon me. Oh, God, what have I done? The agony I have caused. Oh, God. Oh, God! Oh, God!
Well done. Sorry, I couldn't resist that. Before moving on to our second tale of terror, let's get our breaths and listen to this message.
Good evening. This is Michael Scott, President of the Board of Directors for Maplewood Barn Community Theater. Thanks for joining us for our newest production, the Maplewood Barn Radio Theater. Each Friday at this time, you'll be hearing old-time radio stories performed by the same actors you'll see on stage when we welcome you back to the new Maplewood Barn in Nifong Park in the summer of 2012. And now, back to our story on KBIA.
Our second little story from H.G. Wells is called The Flowering of the Strange Orchid. Many years later, it helped inspire the authors of a popular Broadway show. But before we tell you which one that is, let's listen to The Flowering of the Strange Orchid.
I have a fancy that something is going to happen to me today.
Oh, don't say that.
Oh, cousin, you misunderstand me. I mean nothing unpleasant, though what I do mean, I scarcely know. Today, Peters are going to sell a batch of plans from the Andamans and the Indies. I shall go up and see what they have. It may be I shall buy something good unawares. That may be it. More coffee, please.
Are these the things collected by that poor young fellow you told me of the other day?
Yes, yes. Nothing ever does happen to me. I wonder why. Things enough happen to other people. There is Harvey. Only the other week, on Monday, he picked up sixpence. On Wednesday, his chicks all had the staggers. On Friday, his cousin came home from Australia. And on Saturday, he broke his ankle. What a whirl of excitement compared to me.
I think I would rather be without so much excitement. It can't be good for you.
I suppose it's troublesome. Still, you see, nothing ever happens to me. When I was a little boy, I never had accidents. I never fell in love as I grew up. Never married. I wonder how it feels to have something happen to you, something really remarkable. That orchid collector I spoke of was only 36, 20 years younger than myself, when he died. And he had been married twice and divorced once. He had had malarial fever 4 times, and once he broke his thigh. He killed a Malay once, and once he was wounded by a poison dart. And in the end, he was killed by jungle leeches. It must have been all very troublesome. But then, it must all have been very interesting, too, you know. Except, perhaps, the leeches.
I'm sure it was not good for him.
Perhaps not. Good heavens! 8:23. I'm going up by the 11:45 train so that there is plenty of time. I think I shall wear my alpaca jacket. It is quite warm enough. and my gray felt hat and my brown shoes. I suppose I could
think you had better take an umbrella. It looks dark and stormy.
I shall return soon. Hello. Hello. Ah, there you are.
Just as I suspected. You're drenched.
Bah, that's nothing. What an auction. Look, I made some purchases.
It's rare that you make up your mind quickly enough to buy at first glance.
Here, just look. There are vandas and a dendrobe and some phalaenopsis. Aren't they gorgeous, cousin? I knew something would happen today, and I have bought all these. Some of them, I feel sure, do you know, that some of them will be remarkable. I don't know how it is, but I feel just as sure as if someone had told me that some of them will turn out remarkable. That one was not identified. It may be a phalaenopsis, or it may not. It may be a new species, or even a new genus. And it was the last poor Batten ever collected.
I don't like the look of it. It's such an ugly shape.
To me, it scarcely seems to have a shape.
I don't like those things that stick out. They look like tiny appendages.
It should be put away in a pot tomorrow.
It looks like a spider feigning death.
It is certainly not a pretty lump of stuff. But you can never judge of these things by their dry appearance. It may turn out to be a very beautiful orchid indeed. How busy I shall be tomorrow. I must see tonight just exactly what to do with these things, and then tomorrow I shall set to work. At the auction, they said Batten was found dead or dying, lying in a mangrove swamp, with one of these very orchids crushed up under his body. He had been unwell for some days with some sort of native fever, and I suppose he fainted. These mangrove swamps are very unwholesome. Every drop of blood, they say, was taken out of him by the jungle leeches. It may be that very plant that cost him his life by attracting vermin.
I think none the better of it for that.
Men must work, though women may weep.
Fancy dying away from every comfort in a nasty swamp. Fancy being ill with fever, with nothing to take but chlorodyne and quinine. If men were left to themselves, they would live on chlorodyne and quinine. And no one around you but horrible natives. They say the Andaman Islanders are most disgusting wretches. And anyhow, they can scarcely make good nurses, not having the necessary training. And just for people in England to have orchids.
I don't suppose it was comfortable. But some men seem to enjoy that kind of thing. Anyhow, the natives of his party were sufficiently civilized to take care of all of his collection until his colleague, who was an ornithologist, came back again from the interior. Though they could not tell the species of the orchid, and they had let it wither. It makes things all the more interesting.
It makes them disgusting. I should be afraid of some of the malaria clinging to them. And just think, there's been a dead body lying across that ugly thing. Oh, I never thought of that before. There, I declare it has completely spoiled my appetite.
Well, I will take them off the table if you like, and I'll put them in the window seat. I can see them just as well there.
The next few days, Winter Wedderburn was indeed singularly busy in his steamy little hothouse, fussing about with charcoal, lumps of teak, moss, and all the other mysteries of the orchid cultivator. He considered he was having a wonderfully eventful time. In the evening, he would talk about these new orchids to his friends, and over again he reverted to his expectation of something strange. Several of the vandas and the dendrobium died under his care, but presently this strange orchid began to show signs of life.
I am delighted. Here, look, that is a bud. And presently there will be a lot of leaves there. And those little things coming out here are aerial rootlets.
They look to me like little white fingers poking out of the brown. I don't like them.
Why not?
I don't know. They look like fingers trying to get at you. I can't help my likes and dislikes.
I don't know for certain, but I don't think there are any orchids I know that have aerial rootlets quite like that. It may be my fancy, of course. You see, they are a little flattened at the ends.
I don't like them.
Here. Don't be scared.
I know it's very silly of me, and I'm very sorry, particularly as you like the thing so much. But I can't help thinking of that corpse in the jungle.
But the plant may have nothing to do with Batten's death. That was merely a guess of mine.
Anyway, I don't like it.
I'm sorry you feel that way. I find it fascinating.
The housekeeper's trepidation did not stop Wedderburn from preaching to her about the orchid over the following days.
There are such queer things about orchids, such possibilities of surprises. You know, Darwin studied their fertilization and showed that the whole structure of an ordinary orchid flower was contrived in order that moths might carry the pollen from plant to plant. Well, it seems that there are a lot of orchids which cannot possibly be used for fertilization in that way. Some of the cypripediums, for example. There are no insects known that can possibly fertilize them, and some of them have never been found with seed.
But how do they form new plants?
By runners and tubers and that kind of outgrowth. That's easily explained. The puzzle is, what are the flowers for? Very likely, my orchid may be something extraordinary in that way. If so, I shall study it. I've often thought of making researches as Darwin did. But hitherto, I have not found the time, or something else has happened to prevent it. The leaves are beginning to unfold now. I do wish you would come and see them.
The orchid house is so hot, it gives me headaches. I have seen the plant just yesterday, and the aerial rootlets, as you call them, seem to be growing at an alarming rate. Some of them more than a foot long. They remind me of tentacles reaching out after something, and I have begun to dream of them. I will not look at that plant again. You will have to admire it without me.
But the leaves alone are wondrous. They are of the ordinary broad form, and a deep, glossy green, but with splashes and dots of deep red towards the base. I know of no other leaves quite like them. I have placed the plant on a low bench near the thermometer. Now, close by, I've rigged a simple arrangement by which a tap drips on the hot water pipes to keep the air steaming.
I want nothing more to do with that horrid plant. Please stop talking about it.
As you wish. For me, I shall go meditate by the plant to observe its progress. Lord above, it's hot in here. For heaven's sakes, what's this? Ah, a spike has burst out, a blossom! And there is a new odor in the air, an intensely sweet scent that overpowers all others. Oh, but it is so beautiful. The white flowers with streaks of golden orange upon the petals, the heavy labellum coiled in a never-before-seen intricate projection, and a wonderful bluish purple mingled with the gold. It is certainly an altogether new genus. I am in ecstasy of admiration. But that insufferable, cloyingly sweet scent. And it is so hot. I feel faint.
Sometime later.
Cousin, I've made our tea. Cousin? Oh, he's worshipping that horrid orchid. His watch must have stopped. I'll go call him. Cousin? Cousin? Oh, cousin! Why are these tentacles wrapped around you? Cousin! Wake up, cousin! Oh, I must get help. Oh, please, kind sir, help me. My cousin has fainted and I cannot rouse him. I think he may be dead.
Calm down, miss. I'm sure we can. Good Lord, what is that sickly sweet stench? Has he been using opium?
No, look! These cursed tentacles seem to have him in his grasp. They used to sway freely in the air, but now are crowded together, this tangle of gray ropes stretched tight with their ends attached to his chin, neck, and hands. Oh, what shall we do? Cousin! Cousin!
Sir, can you hear me? Look here, upon his cheek, there is a little trickle of blood.
Oh! Get them off! Get them off of him!
Ugh! There is one. Look, its sap is dripping red.
Quickly, the tentacles!
I'm trying, but they're like tough ropes. Oh, my! I believe I feel faint.
No, don't swoon. Grab that flower pot and smash a window. We must dissipate the odor.
Yes, the fresh air is helping to clear my head.
They're too tightly attached. Throw that strange orchid on the floor. Destroy it! Oh, no. They're clinging with grim tenacity. We must get him out of here. Help me drag him. Quickly, we must get him out of here. Oh, cousin, what have you done?
There is an axe.
Use it! Chop off the tentacles.
That's it. Pull them away as I sever them.
Oh, Ugly Cut Cousin! Cousin! Is he dead? What shall we do?
No, he is still breathing, but he is white and bleeding from a dozen circular patches. We must get a doctor.
What? What's the matter?
Oh, Cousin! Thank God you're alive! Sir, please go fetch a doctor at once. Please hurry.
Right away.
Doctor! Doctor! We need a doctor! Someone, please!
What's the matter, Cousin? Why all the fuss?
You fainted in the hothouse.
And the orchid?
I will see to that.
Here is a physician.
Why do we need a doctor?
Hush now. Let him look at you.
Well, it appears he has lost a good deal of blood, but beyond that has suffered no very great injury. Give him brandy, mixed with some pink extract of meat, and put him to bed. Let him rest. Now, what has happened here?
They took Wedderburn into the house and got him settled. In fragments, the housekeeper told her incredible story to the doctor.
That is quite a tale. Are you quite certain this was done by a plant?
Come to the hothouse and you can see for yourself. There, you see?
Goodness, why is the window broken out?
To dissipate the sickly perfume that causes one to swoon. Outside, you can see the tentacles that had to be severed from his body with the hatchet. Their hold was so strong upon him. See? The rootlets are already beginning to wither amidst the bloodstains, and the flowers are growing limp and brown at the edges of the petals.
So I see. And these rootlets are what caused... Wait. Wait, one is still weakly stirring. I will not touch it. Let us leave this cursed place.
The next morning, the strange orchid still lay there, black now and putrescent. The hothouse door banged intermittently in the morning breeze, and all the array of Wedderburn's orchids was shriveled and prostrate. But Wedderburn himself was bright and garrulous upstairs in the full glory of his strange adventure. Did you guess this story was the inspiration for Little Shop of Horrors? We hope you've enjoyed these two short stories by H.G. Wells, adapted for radio by Brad Buchanan. Our producer is Darren Howich. Our players were Anna Frieden as Mrs. Horrocks and the housekeeper, Norm Benedict as Rout and Wedderburn, Willie Wilson as Mr. Horrocks and the stranger, and Darren Howich as the doctor. This is your narrator, Byron Scott, hoping you'll join us again next week at the same time, right here on KBIA, for another Maplewood Barn radio production by Classic Authors. Until then, be kind to your plants.